Luke's Gospel, and we're going to read about a courtroom drama, Jesus before Pilate. Then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation, forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place." When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he'd long desired to see him, because he'd heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then, arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate, and Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day. For before this, they'd been at enmity with each other. Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I do not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." But they all cried out together, "Away with this man and release to us Barabbas," a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder. Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, "Crucify, crucify him." A third time he said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who'd been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked, but he delivered Jesus over to their will. In Jerusalem, 2,000 years ago, a Jew called Jehohanan, who was in his 20s, committed a crime against the Roman authorities. We don't know what he did, but we know all about his punishment. He was crucified. Histories of the time regularly describe the practice, which was deliberately designed to make death prolonged and painful and public. This picture is the nail that was driven through Jehohanan's heel bone. It didn't literally have his name on it, but it was discovered by archaeologists in a stone box that had his remaining bones gathered and his name inscribed on the side. That's one of the only remaining pieces of physical evidence that we have for that most notorious Roman torture. We just read about a criminal called Barabbas. He should have ended the day with his heel looking something like that. There were nails prepared that should have crushed themselves into the hardest part of his leg. There may even have been someone already lined up to gather his remains into a little stone box. But it never happened. Was he still in his cell when he heard them shouting his name? "Barabbas! Barabbas! Barabbas!" Maybe they're shouting because they're glad about what's going to happen to me today. I am an insurrectionist, after all, a murderer. When the cell door opened, he expected to be handed a cross to carry. He expected to be led away. See, verse 32, it's over on the next page of this narrative. It should have read, "Two others who were also criminals were led away to be put to death with Barabbas. And when they came to the place that's called the Skull, they crucified Barabbas and the other criminals." But it never happened. We've been talking about justice this evening. It's a weird justice system, isn't it? When if enough people shout your name loudly enough and demand some other innocent person's death urgently enough, that the judge would actually grant the mob's demands. That's a very strange system of justice. So when his cell door did open, you can only imagine Barabbas' shock when they didn't hand him a cross. They handed him release papers. What? Probably didn't hang around long enough to ask any questions, but maybe on his way out of the prison gate, he turned and noticed the one who was being led away. What's going on here? What's going on is the great swap of places that was predicted hundreds of years previously by the prophet Isaiah. So Jesus, just before this, if you wanted to look at it, it's on page 72 and verse 37. Jesus quotes Isaiah 53. And in doing that, Jesus is basically saying to us, the way to read what's going on in my death is to see it as a direct fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy. Isaiah 53, he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Jesus was completely innocent. That is emphasized from start to finish in Luke's account. And it was the equivalent of the electric chair, crucifixion. So can we be sure that Jesus really was innocent if he was put to such a horrible fate? Well, Pilate declares it repeatedly. Luke wants us to be certain. I find no guilt in this man. Nothing deserving death has been done by him. I find in him no guilt deserving death. Could it be right that the innocent one be crucified? Could it be right that transgressors like Barabbas would go free? Transgressors like us? We might not be murderers, but we've talked about this already. We are the same breed as the criminals. All of us with hearts that have failed to love God and others. All of us deserving death as our penalty. And I'm aware that that just sounds so strong, doesn't it? Because we don't get what a heinous crime it is to ignore the God who made us and gave us our life and breath. Strange justice system where an innocent person dies instead of you or me, isn't it? See, Judge Pilate may have been caving into the crowd, but God the judge planned this, that innocent Jesus would die. Planned it in a way that the great swap would satisfy real justice. Him for completely undeserving Barabbas. Him for completely undeserving you. Can you hear the swap? Listen to Isaiah again. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. With his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. A couple of guys are going to come up and help me. Theo and Samuel are my lovely assistants for this. So Theo here representing himself. Samuel here is Jesus, okay? It could have been the other way around. I just randomly picked it that that was the way around it was. But Theo there, this t-shirt represents his life of sin and failure. And what happens as Jesus dies on the cross is a very simple swap. So I'll take that off. Jesus takes all our offenses and he carries them on himself. Here comes God, the judge, saying there must be justice for Theo's life of sin. There must be punishment. But who's wearing a life of sin? Jesus is. Who takes the punishment? He does. Thanks, guys. It's so simple that, isn't it, on one level? But for me, that is still the most staggering thing that I've ever heard in my whole life. Imagine someone being prepared to step in and pay off your debts for you. Or even a small thing like pay a speeding or a parking fine. That would be strange enough. Imagine someone being prepared to swap in and die for you. Add to that the fact that the person who dies for you is the offended party. We are meant to be doing something to satisfy his justice. And God says, you humans could never do it. So I'll put forward the blood instead. The famous London preacher John Stott said that God himself gave himself to save us from himself. Pilate was not so much a crooked judge as a pathetically weak one. He knew Jesus was innocent. He played to the gallery and opted for an easy life. Their voices prevailed, it says, their will. But there was something much bigger going on. And by framing his own death through the lens of Isaiah's ancient prophecy, Jesus wants you to be certain it was the Lord's will to crush him. The Father's will to send a Roman nail into the Son's heel bone. A nail that had your name on it. So where is God in a world of injustice? It's really understandable, I think, that we ask that question. Well, the cross is God's great signpost to the universe. He says, you'll never be able to say, I sweep abuses under the carpet, that I find loopholes or turn a blind eye, that my mercy is cheap, or even that my grace is free. You'll never have to look again at a messed up world and wonder whether I care about evil, whether judgment is real. You'll never have to be anxious about whether you can trust that I'll do what I say I will do. You'll never have to doubt me when I say that one day I will put all the wrongs right. We have a lot of big, serious questions, don't we? And God has a big, serious, bloody answer. That's why in a couple of weeks' time, us Christians will be remembering the big events at the heart of our faith. We'll be celebrating on Friday as well as Sunday. Easter is so precious because without the cross and the resurrection, Christian people have nothing with them. We have forgiveness from God now and a future with him in a paradise assured. There's lots more to say about how the cross works. Luke wants you to be certain about your forgiveness and about your future. You probably have all kind of questions. But please don't ignore this because you think it can't be this simple. Or because you think you'll be safe to take your own chances with the great judge. Or even, as someone said to me, you feel you need to be held responsible for the things that you've done. All God asks is that you admit your own failure. Stop trying to earn your way into heaven. Jesus swapped places with you. It's the best news in the world. And I pray that you'll come to trust that, to love him. Thanks for listening, guys. Let's take another couple of minutes break. More time to write in your questions. And then in a couple of minutes, Sir Jeremy and I will field those questions.